The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I paid for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
It is Thursday for anyone keeping track. I know many are not. I have to because, you know, the show is different every day. So it is Thursday. Thursday is the day of the week that I get together with Howie Klein, who we all know from downwithtyranny.com. And of course, his work in finding the best progressive candidates and helping to raise money for them with the Blue America PAC. And that's what we're going to really focus on today, because there's, you know, there are still elections going on. There was a primary in Ohio on Tuesday, 2 days ago. It was done by mail, didn't get a whole lot of attention, but there are still candidates in many states that we need to win their primaries, candidates for Congress. Despite whatever happens with the presidential election, and we need to get Donald Trump out of there, the Democrats need to hold on to the House of Representatives and take back the Senate. So we need to, I know we're not in that mindset right now, but we need to get back to it. So that's one of the things, the main thing we'll talk to Howie Klein about today, because there are a lot of candidates who really need the push now, because, you know, TV news is not covering any campaigns. It's all about the virus. So we need to make sure that's a priority, because it is the most important thing facing us today, other than things over which we have no control. But we do have control over who we elect to office. And that brings me to Joe Biden. We're going to get, you know what, it's going to get serious. So let's do what we like to do and start the show with something funny. You know what? I'm going to make it fast today because I have two things I'm choosing between. I don't know which one I want to play, but you know what? We'll do the really quick one today because there's so much to get to. And I may actually get some of your phone calls. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, you know, I like to start the show with something that makes you laugh, because we're doing a lot of other than laughing these days. So this, I don't even know where it came from. I believe it's from the UK or maybe Australia. I haven't quite gotten the accents of these TV presenters, but I don't think they're here. Regardless, they're sharing a video of a music teacher who, you know, as we're all shut in at home, everyone's getting creative. So they found a song by a music teacher and they share it. And so now I'll share it with you. Here we go.
Of course, it is a tricky time for teachers, and they're doing a great job. And this music teacher summed up how many of them are feeling with this, I gotta say, really poignant song.
Hey, so as some of you guys might know, I'm a music teacher, and I found that one of the best ways that I can process the whole transition to online learning and teaching is to write a song.
Okay.
So I wrote a song.
Okay.
I'd like to share that with you guys now. Here
she's got
go.
A ukulele. All right, she's playing the ukulele. And that was it. And we can all identify. Dun, 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 dun. And I was like wondering, why is the intro so long? All right, get to it. And then comes the lyrics. Ah! We can all sing along. That might be the funniest one that I've seen yet. I'm trying to watch the YouTube chat room for the moment, just when everyone sees it, because it's a little, you know, there's a little delay. Anyway, all right. Anyway, there you go. You know what? Let me play you a real one, all right? Because we can. So another one from our friend in South Africa who goes by the name of The Kiffness. All right? Enjoy. Enjoy this one. You'll know the song he's parodying. This is a real one. All right, here we go. Go, go.
Will this lockdown ever end? I've got itchy feet again. Cabin fever got me creeping out the house while my wife's sleeping. Made a decision that I'd probably make again. Couldn't abstain from sneaking out in silence. In the streets I walked alone. Finally was on my own, but found myself in a quandary. Promised my wife I'd do the laundry. Walking back when I saw the flash of blue and red lights that split the night with the sound of sirens. And then the naked light I saw, 10 police vans, maybe more. They pinned me against the floor. Coppers said I had broken the law. I said, please let me go, I was just going to the store. But they ignored and said I have the right to remain silent.
Oh, no.
Cops said, brother, don't you know, at this time the shops are closed. In the argument I was forming, forgot it was 2:30 in the morning. My excuses, like silent raindrops fell. The jail cell is where I was headed with sirens. And now I'm in the prison hall. The cop said you can make one call. It was the hardest choice of my life. Realized I had to phone my wife. Don't think I had it in my heart to say the laundry's still not done. I called no one, so I said to myself in silence.
Oh, yes. He goes by the name The Kiffness. His name is David David something or other. I need to remember it because he's an artist and we're getting a lot of entertainment from his work. But on YouTube, on Twitter, I think on Facebook, The Kiffness, K-I-F-F-N-E-S-S. He has been so prolific. He's apparently an electronica artist there in South Africa, and he's just been knocking these things out. And each one is better than the last. So there's your bit of humor for the day. And I'm sorry to tell you that the rest of the show is probably going to piss you off a little bit. At least, you know, until we get Howie Klein on the line. And then, well, you know, we could piss you off in a whole different direction. But let me start by reading you an email that I got the other day. The email came from, let me pull it up here. Hold on, I just had it here. Okay, a guy named Bob. I won't embarrass him. I won't give out his last name. But Bob felt compelled to put, in quotes, at the bottom of the message, Guanajuato GTO Mexico in his email signature line. So I'm guessing, you know, he deserted us here. He lives in Mexico. And that's important because he's bitching at me about, the subject line reads, quote, "You want a contribution?" question mark. And I opened the email and the text just said, "Then stop repeating the nonsensical Tara Reid accusations." Okay, that's the wrong tack to take with me. I guess he doesn't know me well. So I responded. I said, "They're actually not nonsensical. I believe in truth, and I believe women when they claim they were assaulted, especially when there are corroborating witnesses." There are. And then I said, "You think it's okay to be a hypocrite? Believe Christine Blasey Ford about Kavanaugh, but not Tara Reid because she's talking about Biden? Shame on you." And then I ended with, "You can keep your contribution." And he wrote back, he quoted my line, yeah, they're actually not nonsensical. And he wrote, yes, they are. And then he quoted my line, I believe in truth. And he said, so do I. I deleted the email. Don't worry, I didn't respond again. But see, this is what's troubling. Last night, now this story has been floating around for a few years. Tara Reid had been trying to tell her story, and she'd been coming up against closed doors and brick walls everywhere she went. Until about a month ago, a little over a month ago, I think it was March 25th, when Katie Halper, who does a podcast, interviewed her. And the story broke, except it didn't, because the corporate media didn't pick up on it. For a while, it just hung there with Katie Halper being the only person who was dealing with this story. Now, in full disclosure, I reached out to Katie and I invited her on the show to explain what went on. She was a little freaked out. I guess she'd gotten some pushback and there were a lot of other outside influences that were bearing down on her. I'm not privy to. All I know is she got kind of cagey with me and wound up just like flaking on me. And so it never happened. And she apologized. She said it's just between the story and the coronavirus and everything else, it's all getting to her. And that's quite understandable. Well, I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. And it was finally, I think, last weekend that the New York Times ran a story telling Tara Reid's story, telling what happened. But it was a kind of a mushy kind of story. They didn't really, you know, they didn't pay it much credence. They didn't, they just sort of shrugged it off. They told the story, so at least they gave it ink. It's the first time it got any press in the mainstream corporate media. But they didn't go into great detail, which is why it was really surprising to me when I heard Stacey Abrams asked about it. Now, Stacey Abrams is actively pushing. She is actively lobbying for the job as, you know, Joe Biden's running mate. She'll tell anyone who asks, yes, I want it. Yes, I can do it. She's putting herself out there. And so Don Lemon on CNN yesterday asked Stacey Abrams, what about these allegations against Joe Biden? And what she said really, really bothered me.
Assault allegation against Joe Biden. The accuser, her name is Tara Reid, tells CNN that the alleged incident happened in 1993 while she was working as an aide in Biden's Senate office. She is claiming that she was delivering Biden a duffel bag and says that Biden had her up against the wall in a corridor on the Hill and violated her with his fingers. Now, CNN has now spoken on the record with her former neighbor, who says Reid told her about the allegation within a few years of the alleged incident. Biden's campaign says untrue, never happened. Is this a credible allegation?
Stacey Abrams.
I believe that women deserve to be heard, and I believe that they need to be listened to. But I also believe that those allegations have to be investigated by credible sources.
Okay.
The New York Times did a deep investigation.
No, they didn't.
And they found that the accusation was not credible.
No, they didn't.
I believe Joe Biden. I believe that he is a person who has demonstrated that his love of family, his love
of... She almost said women.
Our community has been made perfectly clear through his work as a congressional leader.
And as an American... Enough. I'm going to cut her off there because I should have stopped her right when she said the New York Times did an in-depth and credible investigation or some such nonsense. They did no such thing. And in fact, the New York Times today is putting out the word because apparently the Biden campaign has made this a talking point. That's where Stacey Abrams got it. The talking point is that the New York Times investigated it and said there's no there there. Well, that's not true. The New York Times published this dismissive story. Stacey Abrams said that. And then yesterday, the New York Times issued a statement pointing to talking points circulated by the Biden campaign that claimed the Times investigation found that Tara Reid's allegations, quote, did not happen. In response, the New York Times said, quote, our investigation made no conclusion either way and accused the Biden campaign of inaccurately describing their reporting. Interesting. So last night, final, and there, since the New York Times story, there have been a few short mentions. And again, I don't watch MSNBC very much, certainly not how I used to. But I saw a few of them, you know, at least cover the story, not going in depth, not, you know, doing a panel discussion on it, not like this doesn't need discussion, but at least acknowledging that the accusation is hanging out there. Last night, Chris Hayes addressed it, and he did a really good job in laying out the facts of the story. So here, in just over 2 minutes, here's what he said.
Throughout the entire Me Too era, there have been moments, I think for many of us, all of us, when we have heard about accusations against someone that we find ourselves desperately wanting not to believe. Whether that is because we have some personal admiration for the individual or their work, or political admiration, someone on our quote-unquote side. But part of the difficult lesson of the Me Too era is not that every accusation is true and everything should be believed on its face, but that you do have to fight yourself when you feel that impulse. You have to do that in order to take seriously what is being alleged and what the evidence is and to evaluate it. And that is the case with the accusation by a woman named Tara Reid against Joe Biden. Reid briefly worked as a Senate aide in Biden's office in the early 90s. Last year, she told a California newspaper that in 1993, Joe Biden, quote, touched her several times, making her feel uncomfortable. Now, at that time, Reid was one of several women who came forward around that moment with accusations against the former vice president of inappropriate sort of over-physicalness, touching, kissing, or hugging, that they say made them feel uncomfortable. Then last month, she made a much more serious allegation, telling first a podcast and later the New York Times that in 1993, Joe Biden pinned her to a wall in the Senate building, reached under her clothing, and penetrated her with his fingers. Reid told the Times that she filed a complaint with the Senate that same year about what happened with Biden. Quote, she said she did not have a copy of it and such paperwork has not been located. Now, Reid also said she complained to Biden's executive assistant, as well as to two top aides about harassment by Mr. Biden, not mentioning the alleged assault. All three of those people who were interviewed by the Times deny having any memory of a complaint. A spokeswoman for Joe Biden says the allegation is false, and they have strongly denied it. This week, there was also a new development in the story, and that is that Tara Reid's former neighbor at the time went on the record with her name telling Business Insider that in 1995 or 1996, a few years after this, that Reid told her she had been assaulted by Biden.
Yep.
NBC News reached out to Reid's neighbor, who later confirmed by text message the story. This on-the-record reporting from a neighbor, a roughly contemporaneous relaying of the story, has rightly occasioned a new round of coverage and scrutiny, while also creating some serious tension within the progressive coalition.
Okay, so that's two minutes and 20 seconds of Chris Hayes' segment last night on the Tara Reid, Joe Biden sexual assault story. Here's the problem. I can't share the rest of it with you because I can't find it online because, well, MSNBC hasn't posted it. In fact, if you go on MSNBC.com and you search Tara Reid, the only thing that comes up is, well, Nancy Pelosi's comment yesterday, or was it today, in which she said, I can't even paraphrase this. I'm going to have to play it for you because I find it so reprehensible. Here's Nancy Pelosi. She's asked about two things. First of all, listen to, I left in the question from the reporter. I don't even know who the journalist is, but good on her. Listen to how Nancy Pelosi dismisses her, sounding awfully Trumpian in the process, and then goes on to dismiss Tara Reid's allegations.
As Biden is a concern, how do Democrats square with the idea that they're essentially they're standing by Biden, but they're using a comparatively different standard
than Kavanaugh.
When you demanded an investigation on Justice Kavanaugh, when a very similar allegation came out on him.
Let me just say, I respect
your
question, and I don't need a lecture.
I don't
speech.
Need a lecture?
Here's the thing.
Actually, maybe you
I
do.
I have complete respect for the whole Me Too movement. I have four daughters and one son.
Okay.
And there's a lot of excitement around the idea
around the idea of what? That woman be heard. Okay.
There is also due process.
Yes, there is. And so where's the investigation?
The fact that Joe Biden is Joe Biden. Statements from his campaign, or not his campaign, but
yes, his campaign.
Former employees who ran his office.
From his campaign.
Joe Biden, and I think that he is telling the truth and that this did not happen.
Oh,
so,
my
and,
God.
And,
there was never any record of this. There was never any record.
What?
And that nobody ever came forward to say something about it apart from the principal involved.
Because she didn't tell anyone at the time.
The happiest day for me this week was to support Joe Biden
for
president of the United States. He's a person of great integrity, a great concern for the American people. He authored the Violence Against Women
Act.
She
just totally brushed off
the chair
the accusation.
Of the Judiciary Committee in the 90s. He has been an advocate for funding it all along since then. And I believe that he will be a great president of the United States. He is the personification of hope and optimism.
Seriously?
And
there's a rape allegation.
For our country, a person of great values. So I want to remove all doubt in anyone's mind. I have a great comfort level with the situation as I see it, with all the respect in the world for any woman who comes forward. But all the highest regard for Joe Biden.
With all the respect in the world for any woman who comes forward, with all the highest respect in the world for Joe Biden. Are you fucking kidding me? Seriously. What kind of shit is that? If you respect the women, you should call for an investigation. There are reams and reams of papers from Joe Biden's time in the Senate that was donated to the state of Delaware, to their archives, which are set to be released to go public 2 years after Joe Biden officially retires from public life. If that complaint is there, it would be in those papers. Where's the harm in looking? But the Democrats, these people who were so, rightfully so, all over Brett Kavanaugh after Christine Blasey Ford's accusations, which, by the way, were no more credible than Tara Reid's are, the same kind of contemporaneous statement she made to other people, that's the same evidence that it exists now. But where people like Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden were all over. Believe the woman. When a woman talks, you believe her. You listen to her. They won't give her the time of day. Well, today, if you open the Washington Post, the lead editorial there reads, I've got to scroll up to the headline. Biden himself should address the Tara Reid allegations and release relevant records. All right, it's not a very long editorial, so I'll share it with you. This is the Washington Post editorial board. This is not a guest op-ed. This is not a byline. This is the Washington Post editorial board who wrote, Tara Reid deserves to be heard and voters deserve to hear her. They deserve to hear from Joe Biden, too. The former vice president and presumptive Democratic presidential nominee has yet to speak publicly about the allegation Ms. Reid has lodged against him, that when she was a member of his Senate staff in the 1990s, Mr. Biden pushed her against a wall and put his fingers up her skirt and then inside her. Mr. Biden's campaign says, quote, this never happened. Contemporaneous accounts of Ms. Reid's claim are counterweighted by the details of her superiors at the time that she reported any misconduct, as well as inconsistencies in her retelling. There are, at the moment, no clear conclusions. There may never be. But that's no excuse for not searching. One place to start is the records covering Mr. Biden's 36-year Senate career, donated to the University of Delaware in 2012, here you go, and slated for release to the public 2 years after Mr. Biden retires from public life, what I just told you. These could contain confirmation of any complaint Ms. Reid made, either through official congressional channels or to the three other employees she claims she informed, not specifically of the alleged assault, but more generally of harassment. They could also contain nothing of the sort. Insisting on an inventory doesn't mean one believes Ms. Reid or doesn't believe her. It signals only a desire for the public to know all that's been able to be known, all that's able to be known, which ought to be in everyone's interest. There are 1,875 boxes and 415 gigabytes of electronic content, largely uncataloged. Searching won't be as easy as some might assume, but an inventory conducted with an eye toward releasing only relevant material could at least ascertain whether personal records are part of the archive at all. Demands for the release of the entire trove invite a worthwhile debate about candidate disclosures, yet that's not a battle that needs to be fought today. The narrower question is whether the public ought to have as much information as possible about an assault accusation against a presidential contender, and the answer is yes. Another place to look is at the source, the candidate himself. Mr. Biden may have little to say besides what his campaign has already said, that he did not do this and that this is not something he ever would do, yet the way to signal he takes Ms. Reed's case seriously and the cases of women like her seriously, is to go before the media and the public, ready to listen and to reply. Trump has been credibly accused of sexual assault, including rape, by dozens of women. He has responded by brushing the accusations off, once claiming repulsively, "She's not my type." It may seem unfair to hold Mr. Trump's likely rival in the 2020 race to a standard that Mr. Trump has failed to meet again and again. Mr. Trump shouldn't be allowed to set that standard. A better man could. Again, that's the main editorial in today's Washington Post. Yet, you know what happened today on Twitter? Chris Hayes covered the story last night. You heard the segment I played, objectively covered it, gave out the facts surrounding the story. Well, trending now on Twitter is Fire Chris Hayes. Hashtag Fire Chris Hayes. What is wrong with Democrats? I don't feel any alignment with these people who are harassing Chris Hayes, who write me ugly emails. You want a contribution? You need to stop talking about Tara Reid. Well, fuck you. Sorry, I'd rather go broke than put a muzzle on, because the same way I called out Brett Kavanaugh and said there needs to be a thorough investigation based on the word of Christine Blasey Ford, that's exactly how I feel about Tara Reid. She has every bit as much credibility, and she deserves a fair hearing, not for the Democratic Party to say, you know what, you know, I know Joe Biden. Fuck you, you know Joe Biden. How about all those girls who he's touched inappropriately? I'm not saying he touched them sexually. I'm saying he touched them inappropriately. If he put his hands on my daughter, I'd smack him across the face. I don't care who the fuck he is. We don't have a nominee yet. This is an election year unlike any other in our history. We're not even there yet. Just know, if you think things are weird now, I promise you they're going to get a whole lot stranger. Better to get rid of a flawed candidate now and come up with someone who has the integrity, who doesn't have loose hands, who can win this thing, and who will be an effective leader. I'm beside myself, angry that people, you know, the same people who screamed about Brett Kavanaugh are now turning the other cheek and excusing perhaps rape from this guy, from Joe Biden. Perhaps, I said, I'm not convicting him. I'm saying this merits an investigation. It merits a response from Joe Biden. It merits a hearing, at least. It merits a look into all these documents that exist. And it merits these people not shirking their, you know, allegiance as women. The Me Too movement was a big deal over the last few years. You're ready to throw it out with the trash and go back to the way things were, where if a powerful man throws you up against the wall and sticks his fingers up your skirt, it's okay because he's a Democrat? I don't think so. God, it pisses me off. And again, fire Chris Hayes? No! Give him a raise! Because he's doing a tough story. I promise you I'm going to get hate mail today. You know, the Progressive Voices Network, I'm thrilled that they carry my show and they have me on at 5 o'clock. I get a lot of slack, because I don't toe the party line. I do not say my party right or wrong. I say my party when it's right. And when they're wrong, I'm damn sure going to call them out on it. This is wrong. There is a credible allegation made against a prominent man who is likely to be the Democratic nominee for president, and perhaps, and in fact, when I'm looking at Donald Trump, even if Joe Biden's a rapist, I'll say, hopefully, the 45th president of the United States, or the 46th president of the United States, because Donald Trump is head and tails worse than Joe Biden, even on his worst, most rapey day, if it's true. Donald Trump, Joe Biden has, you know, ugly, this is an ugly allegation against him. Most of them, are bullshit. They're touchy-feely things. And Joe Biden is an anachronism. He's almost 80 years old. It's a throwback to when he was younger, when men did that and thought it was okay. Donald Trump, I believe, with every inch of my being, is a rapist. I have no doubt whatsoever. But the Republicans don't give a shit about that. His followers don't care. Therefore, Trump, no matter what, go ahead and rape. You're famous. You can get away with it. That's not what we're supposed to be about. We're supposed to be better than that. We're supposed to be more principled than that. This is not okay. So bring on the hate if you got it. I hope you'll join with me and say, Joe Biden, you need to talk about this. You need to stop running away from the question. And you need to release all those documents that the University of Delaware has, because we need to get to the truth. And maybe, just maybe, you should say, you know what? I need to bow out gracefully. You're right. I did some horrible things in my past, and I'm not the right person to be president. I don't know who is. Maybe Sherrod Brown. I don't know about you. I'd go for Sherrod Brown at this point. I'd still like Bernie Sanders, but look, I'm not putting my own interests ahead of everyone else. And you know, the hypocrites, well, they're hypocrites on the left now too, but the ones on the right, they're going to be all over this. First of all, there's still the Hunter Biden nonsense, which is not so much nonsense. We can talk about that another day. But you know, they're going to be all over this. It doesn't matter the fact that Donald Trump is a rapist. Doesn't matter that he's got more 24 accusations hanging over his head. Doesn't matter, because they don't care. What they'll do is say, ooh, someone accused Joe Biden of rape. But it's like, don't look at me, look at them. We're better than this, or we used to be better than this. God. All right. Ooh, I'm late. We got to get Howie Klein on the line. So, I don't know. After that, I need a batch of Dirty Debbies. Someone, mix up some extra for me today, will you? Please?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog Special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I just went on a sort of an epic rant that I really hadn't planned on ranting. But this whole story with Joe Biden and Tara Reid is really getting to me. Apparently last night, I played a clip. Chris Hayes finally dealt with the story, laid out all the facts. Here's what's on the table. And today on Twitter, hashtag fire Chris Hayes is trending, because Democrats are as hypocritical as Republicans are, apparently.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I hope that's not news to you.
No, it's not. It's really not. It's just really frustrating. I mean, hearing Stacey Abrams say the New York Times did a thorough investigation and they found there was no, there was nothing there.
That's, right, that went out as a memo for all Democrats to say that. So they'll all say that.
I know. And the New York Times pushed back and said the Biden campaign has released talking points saying that our investigation cleared him. It did no such thing. Our investigation found no outcome one way or the other.
So what does that tell you about Stacey Abrams, by the way?
It tells me that she's an opportunist and doesn't care and is not there for women. She's there for herself because she wants to be vice president. And it hurts because I think she's a smart woman. I thought she had a bright career ahead of her. This is opportunism. This is brown. This was just this turned my stomach, just like Nancy Pelosi's statement today did as well, where she tells a reporter asking a question. I don't need a lecture. I know Joe Biden. Oh, stop it. Stop it.
I was up his ass when that happened.
Yeah.
Did not put anything in that woman.
Wow. Wow. Just infuriating. But today, the Washington Post has a lead editorial saying this needs to be investigated.
I wonder why they didn't say any of this stuff when there was an active primary and Bernie was still in the race.
You
any
know,
idea?
Good question, because nobody would deal with it then. It was all out there. Katie Halper did that podcast on March 25th, and actually the story was out there before then. Just no one would give Tara Reid the time of day to tell it. And it wasn't until, a week and a half ago that the New York Times published their piece, which was kind of a dismissive of the whole incident. It's just infuriating. The whole thing just makes me so mad.
Yep. Well, me too.
Yeah. So, all right, got that out of the way. So, Howie Klein, I had a really fun. I had an exciting moment last night when I'm looking on my phone and I'm playing on Twitter, and all of a sudden it pops up that Andrew Romanoff followed me. And I'm like, oh my God, Andrew Romanoff followed me. For those who don't know, Andrew Romanoff is he's running for the Democratic nomination for the Senate seat against Cory Gardner in Colorado. And Blue America endorsed him, right? Tell us about Andrew Romanoff, Howie.
Yes, we did endorse him. And he was the Speaker of the State House.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not an unknown person. He's been raising really, really good money. He's extremely good on medical issues. That's what his career has been in.
Mm-hmm.
So he's someone who will be pushing hard for Medicare for all if he's elected. And he's running against a very, very, very weak Republican, Cory Gardner. But
right.
First,
he has to win the primary.
And that's
right.
What the problem
is. And now, when Andrew Romanoff got into the race, his now primary opponent, John Hickenlooper, or Frackenlooper, as we affectionately like to call him around here, was running for president. He wasn't in the Senate race, and he said
he said he's not interested in being in the Senate, and said he would make a bad senator.
Yep.
Has he changed his mind that he'll make a bad senator? Because he was right then, he would make a bad senator.
Right. Right. Well, and so he did an about face after he pulled out of the presidential race and said, OK, Schumer convinced him to. And now whenever if I happen to be on CNN or MSNBC and they do a segment on the Senate race in Colorado, they talk about it as if it's a done deal. It's Cory Gardner versus John Hickenlooper. It's like, oh, no, it isn't. They still have a primary coming up.
And so far, all of the contests that the two of them have had Romanoff winning, beating Hickenlooper.
Really?
So they had a convention, for example, and it wasn't even close. They've had several grassroots oriented things with Democratic voters where Romanoff wins.
Mm-hmm.
So that's odd. Also, all of the polls that have included Romanoff have showed both Hickenlooper and Romanoff easily beating Gardner. So it's not like Schumer has a case where he could say, "Well, we need Hickenlooper because only he can win." That isn't true. Romanoff can win also. So this is just another case of Schumer and the establishment wanting a conservative, not wanting a progressive, wanting someone who will serve the interests of the donor class, period. That's all they care about. And that is not Andrew Romanoff. Andrew Romanoff is a progressive. So that's what this race is about. And of course, that you know, that's still ahead of us. So, you know, yes, Blue America has endorsed him. We're trying to raise money for him. You know, Hickenlooper gets his money from corporate PACs and from Schumer's contacts. And he's, you know, raising immense sums of money and spending it to pound Andrew.
Wow.
Andrew is mostly running on money that he's getting from small donors. So it's a very, very tough situation. But it's still competitive, and he can still win. Unfortunately, there are a bunch of other candidates in the race who are just sort of vanity candidates.
Oh, really?
And some of them are, you know, very nice people, and they have, you know, they have a point of view. But all they're doing is taking away votes from Andrew, and they're going to throw the race to Hickenlooper, possibly.
God, so I hate that. But the other component of it is the media. I've seen Hickenlooper, now again, not in the last couple of weeks because it's been all virus all the time, but when they were still covering the elections, I saw Hickenlooper a number of times where there was no mention of the fact that he was even in a primary. It was like, oh, Hickenlooper's running for the Senate from Colorado. He'll go up against Cory Gardner. And I scream at the television, hell no. We're in primary season. And Howie, this is, you know, what I really wanted to talk to you about today. Is that we are in primary season, but you wouldn't know it if, you know, you watched the news, cable news, network news, whatever news. That's not what they're talking about. Obviously, we have a pandemic killing us at record numbers. So that, I guess that's more important, but it isn't. We still have an election in November, hopefully. And we need, the Democrats need to take back the Senate and keep the House in addition to winning the White House. And there are still, as we talked briefly last week, a lot of great progressive candidates who still have primaries coming up, are still working towards the nomination to be on the ballot in November. But it's hard to do because, I mean, I had all the primaries in my calendar. And for instance, this past Tuesday, it was supposed to be Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, New York, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. None of those happened. So we don't know when the primaries are, how people are going to vote, but we do know they need to vote. So this is, we need to amplify this message, don't we?
Absolutely. And especially all of the states that we're talking about are allowing vote by mail without any, you know, any funny business. Like some states to, you know, try to get people to not vote by mail by saying, you know, what's the secret password? You know, let's see a note from your doctor. Why do you want to vote by mail? What's the reason? And none of that's happening now. All of the states that matter in terms of the Democratic primaries, you just can vote by mail. End of story. Even the Republicans realize that they made a terrible mistake in Wisconsin. Last I looked, there were 56 people who had either been poll workers or who had voted that day who have now contracted COVID-19. The state is very, very widely blaming that on the Republican Party, which is great. Now, I don't mean that Republicans are blaming it on the Republican Party.
No.
I mean, a few may, but they forget them. What I mean is that independent voters, as well as Democrats, are blaming the Republican Party, whose fault it is. They forced this in-person voting. They overrode the governor's orders, and they took it to the Republican Supreme Court in Wisconsin, and then into the U.S. Supreme Court. So it was all stacked against the Democrats. The Republicans forced the election, and ironically, the Democrats won anyway.
Wow. Okay, well, that's good news. That was crazy. But now, of course, Trump is trying to kill off the post office, something Republicans have been trying to do for years. So it's nothing new. But he's getting closer. And right now they want to do it because they don't want people to vote by mail. Because Donald Trump accurately said if everyone's allowed to vote by mail, Republicans will never win again.
Right. And it's not likely that he can do that, that he'll be able to, you know, accomplish that between now and November. I mean, yes, they want to do it and they may even try to do it, but it's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
You know, I mean, Bernie would, you know, I mean, when you want to talk about filibuster, Bernie would sit on the Senate floor till he died.
Yes, he would.
That's what it took.
Yes, he would. And it's one of the things we love about Bernie Sanders. You know, yeah, we'll go down that road another day. Howie, I came across a story that I'm saving for you because I thought you'd like this. A top donor to Senator Lindsey Graham is switching sides.
I did see it. And, you know, the thing about South Carolina is it's a waste of time.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
there are
some races that Democrats can really win, that even in races that are not really expected. But South Carolina isn't one of them.
You don't think Jamie Harrison can beat Lindsey Graham?
Crystal ball, you know, came up with some bullshit today, but they don't know anything. I mean, if you look back at Sabato's crystal ball's record and the other prognosticators' records, what it shows is they're always wrong. Always wrong means they're never right. They're never right. Except, I want to make one exception. The week before, or in some cases a day or two before, elections, they sometimes get the hint.
Mm-hmm.
Not always. Sometimes. Okay. So if you want to go to Crystal Ball or, you know, the Larry Sabato's Crystal Ball or to the Cook Report, don't go way in advance. They get it wrong all the time.
Right.
So they today, you know, for no good reason, said that Lindsey Graham goes from a sure thing to a likely thing.
Yeah, I did see that. Yep.
Now, the funny thing is that they stumbled into something that they know nothing about in the other change that they made, because they did the same thing with Dan Sullivan in Alaska, where they went from, you know, for sure to likely.
Uh-huh.
And then when they explained it, they missed the one reason why they should have made that change and beyond that change, and they don't know about it. And everyone in Alaska does know about it, but these clueless imbeciles who get all their information from the DSCC,
right,
and the NRSC, so everything comes from the committees, the Republican committee and the Democratic committee. They do nothing. They know nothing. Everything comes from the committees. That's why they get it wrong all the time, because the committees tell them what the committees want to see. So the reality is that Dan Sullivan is so scared of running against this independent named Al Gross, who's running as a Democrat. He's so afraid of him that he's probably not going to run. Now, I wouldn't bet the House he's not going to run,
mm-hmm,
but I would make a reasonable gentleman's wager for some money on that. He knows he's not going to win. He knows he's not going to get reelected. Al Gross is now is a physician, and he's also a fisherman professionally, both,
okay,
and he's very popular. The thing that people in Alaska love more than anything is the free money they get from the oil, the oil profits.
Right.
So the whole state is on welfare. Every person, it was Al Gross's
father. Oh, I thought it was socialism.
That through.
I thought it was socialism.
Well, it is socialism.
It is.
They love it.
I know, but they won't call it that. Right.
And they know it was Gross's dad who got that through. So there's a certain level of love for that guy. What Dan Gross really wants is to be governor. And in 2022, there's a gubernatorial race. So this is a little tricky. The guy who is the current governor, who is so hated, or has been so hated until now, he was really had no shot to be reelected. He had no shot for any further career. He just, no one liked him, this guy Dunleavy. Well, because of the, because he looks so much better than Trump in terms of taking care of COVID-19,
mm-hmm,
and there's nothing in Alaska. I mean, it's probably got, I think it's got the smallest numbers in every category of any state. But if it's not the number one least, it's close. So there's nothing going on there with COVID-19. They liked the way Dunleavy handled this. The first thing anyone liked about him, and mostly because Trump, you know, they realized Trump is such a clown. So he's thinking now he should run for that Senate seat. So the plan, which may or may not happen, is for Dan Sullivan to drop out of the race, the governor to jump into the race.
Oh, yeah.
And here's where it gets interesting. The guy who is now the lieutenant governor, who would become governor, has no interest in being governor.
Huh.
So he would do it, you know, for his party for 2 years, just like he's doing the lieutenant governor thing, which he didn't want to do either, and the party forced him into it. And that would make room for Sullivan to run in 2022 to be governor, which is exactly what he wants. And he knows that 2022 is going to be just the most massive Republican year since 2010 because of the same thing. The Democrats have picked the worst shit candidates on the face of the earth. You know, Schumer and the DCCC in the Senate for Schumer and the House for the D-Trip. They have just picked just such bad candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And the candidates from last cycle who are going to probably win again, well, I think almost all of them will win. There may be two or three who are so putrid that they won't. But the majority of them who are so terrible, they're going to win again as well now. And then in 2022, they'll all be defeated in this massive red wave. So why will there be a red wave? Well, there won't really be a red wave, just like there's no blue wave. What there'll be in 2022 is a massive anti-blue wave. This year, we're going to see a massive anti-red wave, just like we did in 2018, thanks to Donald Trump. But a lot of these Democrats who were elected in 2018 were elected in pretty Republican districts, and they're really bad. And they're not doing anything. You know, you take someone like Katie Porter. Katie Porter was elected in a very Republican district.
Yes.
She's very, very safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know why she's safe?
Because
she does things, and everyone knows it. They see her doing things. They see her doing things for them.
Yeah.
And she is beloved in her district. The NRCC originally plan to target her and make her one of their big, you know, the big things they were going to go against and like spend millions and millions. They're not doing that anymore.
Really?
That's over.
Wow.
You know, they give it a little bit of, talk time, but in reality, she's safe. She's safe. They're not going to waste any money on her. So why aren't these other Democrats who were elected in Republican areas doing something? Because they don't know what to do. They don't know how to do it, and they have no passion to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And there are districts that are less red than her, districts that are more red than her, where the Democrat is in trouble. Again, chances are the wave this year, the anti-red wave this year, is going to be big enough so that all these crappy Democrats, like a guy like Gil Cisneros,
right,
who's near Katie Porter's district, a guy like Harley Rauda, who's near Katie Porter's district,
right,
borders on it, in fact, they'll be safe this year. And then they'll get wiped out in 2022.
Yeah.
So I got off on talking about 2022,
yes, you did.
And we really should really be talking about 2020. And the reason 2022 popped in my mind is just because of the Alaska Senate race. So, yeah, Sabato accidentally got it right, totally by accident.
Right.
That it's moving in a Democratic direction.
Okay, but so the reason I brought up the story, I mean, Jamie Harrison, I've heard a number of times, and I think he's great. You don't think he can beat Lindsey Graham?
No, terrible. Terrible.
Terrible, really?
He's a lobbyist.
Oh.
You know, you want to describe piece of shit politician, just have his picture up as the description. He is a right, I don't want to say right wing, a conservative lobbyist. He, you know, for example, so he hasn't been in office, so it's hard to see how he would vote. No,
right.
Not that hard.
Right.
He's on the DNC, and you can look up his votes.
He's on the DNC.
You know, should we have a debate on the Green New Deal?
No.
A lot of people voted yes. Jamie Harrison voted no. Jamie Harrison represents the clients who pay him. That's been his whole life. That's all he is. So the Democrats are trying to paint him as this, you know, great, you know, African-American leader and, you know, someone who's going to be, you know, the next Martin Luther King or not or something. He's the furthest thing from that that you could ever hope for.
Oh, no.
Now, if I was living in South Carolina and I thought he had some kind of a chance, I would never vote for him. But I would probably, like, you know, just shut my mouth and see it go. But this guy has no chance at all. The DSCC.
Yes. The DSCC.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
The Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, Schumer's outfit, is trying to make something out of this when there's nothing. Because Lindsey Graham is so bad and he's so disliked. And all the Republicans in South Carolina, you know, they know that he's a closet case and that makes them uncomfortable. They know they remember him fighting with Trump. And even if he's up Trump's ass now, metaphorically, they know that he's no real friend of Trump's, and they don't like him. So, you know, is there a real chance that Jamie Harrison is going to win? I cannot imagine in a million years that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They have, I mean, ironically, the Republican who is appointed to the other Senate seat is an African American Republican.
Tim Scott.
Yes, a very who had a great record in the 80s. He's terrible, mm-hmm. and it would just be so ironic too ironic for South Carolina to wind up with two African American senators. I just can't imagine that something like that would happen in that racist state.
Right.
No. Well, I mean, forget about that one. It's just not going to happen.
Okay, all right, burst the bubble. But you took off the blinders about Jamie Harrison then, because the media tells a different story. This is why we need to get the truth. All right, Howie,
but they don't know. The media doesn't know.
No, they just know what
they literally don't
fed.
Know. I mean, and you hear people on Twitter. You know, you see it on Twitter. The people are saying things that just aren't true. They see he's a Democrat and he's black, so therefore he must be great.
Yeah.
Not the way it goes.
Right. No,
he's
that is not certainly great. Not
he's
the way
terrible.
It goes.
Terrible. He was terrible on the DNC. Doesn't it say enough that someone decides that they're going to make a career out of being a lobbyist? Does that tell you something?
Yeah, that's a big red flag right there. Absolutely. All right, Howie.
And the worst of them. He works for a terrible firm and has terrible clients. And, you know, he's just awful. Just awful.
Oh, okay. All right, then let's move on to something better. Do you know, is there an updated...
There are a lot of very, very good candidates. I don't want to just be, putting people down like I just did.
Right, right, right. So
tell us... there are some really, really good ones. In fact, one of the guys running against Mitch McConnell is a guy named Charles Booker. Now, Charles Booker is also an African-American, but it comes from a very, very different place than Jamie Harrison. Of course, the DSCC has no interest in him whatsoever, but he's a state legislator from Louisville. He is a progressive. He thoroughly, entirely endorses the progressive platform. That's what he does when he's in the state legislature, and that's what he's running on now. When he goes around the state talking to people, he's talking to them about why the Green New Deal is so important for Kentucky. Why Medicare for All is so important for Kentucky. That's what the guy is talking about. Why the state universities should be free.
Wow. It's so frustrating, though, Howie, because when I hear, anytime the media talks about Mitch McConnell's race, it's him against Amy McGrath. I didn't even know there was anyone else in the primary.
Well, you know what? There are two pretty good candidates. I mean, Booker is really good, and there's another really good one. But yes, the media has already given it to Amy McGrath.
All right.
And it's not just those two races. They do this all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they because, like I said, they get their information not by reporters who go out and look for the information and try to figure it out on their own. They get it from the DSCC and the NRSC. That's where they get their information. And you know what? It's bad information and it's biased information, and it's not doing anybody any good, and it's a real tragedy. And it's not just the House, but it's not just the Senate, but it's the House as well. So yes, you've got it in Kentucky, and you've got it in Colorado, and in Maine it's the same thing. There is a centrist nothing who means nothing, who stands for nothing, who's just nothing, who
Schumer picked. Yeah.
But another woman who's in this, who is a lifetime fighting progressive, Betsy Sweet.
Yes.
And, no one mentions Betsy Sweet. The media doesn't even know she's running. And, every time they do a poll, it's just the other Republican light Democrat running against Susan Collins. That's it.
Ugh.
So people think that's the race. But there is a primary coming up. And I'll tell you something. Bernie, in 2016, Bernie swept Maine on the same issues that Betsy Sweet is running on.
Hmm.
So I wouldn't write her off.
Okay.
Obviously she's got everything against her because the whole Democratic Party machine is pushing the other person.
Right. Of course.
Of course. So yeah, and then you, and then in the House you just got the same thing. I mean, you know, I did a story this morning about how about Morgan Harper. So Morgan mm-hmm. Harper worked at the in the Treasury Department under Obama at what is it, the CFPB?
Right, BP. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Elizabeth Warren's agency that she got up and running. Right.
She worked there, mm-hmm. and you know, this is a I can't remember how old she is. She looks extremely young. So I want to say she's 36, but she looks like she's 26.
Right.
She's a really, really stunning woman. She is a young, accomplished African-American woman with just charisma everywhere. She's what the party should be trying to bring in the biggest way.
Absolutely.
And she ran a terrific campaign against a corrupt, old, African-American who stands for nothing, does nothing. She's on the Financial Services Committee. Her husband, until recently, was working in the payday lending industry. He was a lobbyist for the payday lending industry. And that's her whole – I looked at a picture that I ran when I was doing this story. I was looking for a picture, and I found a picture from when I first – heard of her when she was in the state legislature, and the picture is her on her yacht.
Oh God!
You know the SS Payday Lender. I mean, so the corruption is disgusting.
My God.
The conservative. She's a conservative Democrat. She's on the House Financial Services Committee, where she is a in the pocket for the banks. She never goes away. She and AOC virtually never vote the same way, even though they're both Democrats on this committee. You know, she votes with the Republicans.
Right.
So anyway, Morgan ran this great race against her. Morgan, who would be a lifesend for the Democrats to have someone like her in the caucus. I mean, I'm telling you, they don't have great young leaders like she is. It could be someone, another person. I mean, no one is going to be necessarily exactly like someone else. You can't say she's going to be like AOC or she's going to be like Katie Porter. You can't do that. Everyone is who they are. But that's what she'll be, someone like that. That's the kind of person she would be in Congress. So the Congressional Black Caucus got really nervous about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, because they saw that she had a very, very good chance of knocking off one of their members, so they went to war against her. Mm-hmm. All of them. Mm-hmm. No, I shouldn't say all of them. All the powerful conservatives that are part of that. In other words, the Biden people.
Right, right.
And she lost.
Yep.
She lost her race on Tuesday, which is a tragedy. They were celebrating. They were publicly celebrating that this incredible person lost a race.
That the
they
progressive
should be crying
lost, right.
That this person isn't going to be part of their caucus. They should be miserable about it. But nobody supported her. I'll tell you what Blue America did, of course. I'll tell you something really, and so did Justice Democrats and a few other groups, but I mean no one in Congress did. I'll tell you something funny.
Okay.
I won't tell you something. Uh-oh. Never mind.
All right, we're coming up at the end of the show. Anyway, I mean, we're already running late, so
There are a lot of really, really excellent primary candidates running for House seats. Eva Petsova in Arizona is just fantastic, and she's running against a horrid, he calls himself a blue dog, but this is the guy who was a Republican in the state legislature. He was a Republican in the House, and then he was a Republican in the state Senate, and now he's in the U.S. Congress. And he doesn't call himself a Republican now. He calls himself a blue dog.
Oh,
but he votes for the Republicans. And he's just terrible. This guy, Tom O'Halloran, and Eva is fantastic. I mean, she was in 2016, she was a Bernie delegate. She's a brilliant woman. She's well-spoken. She has a record that you can go to and see what she's going to be like, because she was on the biggest town in her district, is Flagstaff. And she was on the Flagstaff City Council, where the main thing she worked on and successfully worked on was raising the wages for raising minimum wage races. That was her whole thing, and she was very successful and took on the Koch brothers who tried to get it repealed after she got it passed, and she beat them again. So yeah, it's really important, because there are a whole bunch of these people running who would make Congress a better place. And I realize that I just dragged you over your time limit.
It's okay. I just have to do some editing. to fit this in on the Progressive Voices Network at 5. So I got to run. Howie Klein, we will pick this up next week because Jess
is still here. Let's talk about
it
next week.
You got it. Find Howie, of course, by Howie at downwithtyranny.com and the Blue America Pack. And here on Thursdays. All right, I got to go because we're late. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow, I'm going to tell you about a film, an amazing film dealing with immigration and what the fuck this country is doing. Oh, my goodness. It's a Friday. We'll have some fun, I promise. All right, thanks for listening, everyone. See you tomorrow. Bye.